listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kurula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake Up Hollywood, this is your host of the most, Nikki Kurula. We're going to jump right into another pandemic episode of Wake Up Hollywood, all the way from, you're still in St. Louis, aren't you, Jackson?
Right in the bullseye of America.
That's right, from all the way from St. Louis, Missouri. Please welcome Jackson Stokes. Say hello, Jackson.
Hey, what's going on, y'all? Thank you so much for having me, Nikki.
Of course, man. Dude, you got mood lights behind you? I love it, man.
Well, yeah, I actually just redid the basement 2 days ago, and it's all stuff I had, and we couldn't paint the walls yet, so I just refurbished a lot of things, and I had Christmas lights, so I had to vibe it out a little bit.
You know we're buds because, look, I got a little basketball court too, dude.
Oh, dude. Hold on. I gotta show you this real quick, if you don't mind. I gotta show you this because you will love this more than anybody. This is actually a custom made Jimmy.
Oh, dude, that's dope, dude. That is dope. That is super dope. Mad respect.
Yes. Thank you. I was like, oh, Nikki. So, best of both worlds. Well, sorry to take that.
Yeah, all good. All good. So, dude, you know, a lot of people don't know how we met, and it's a pretty interesting story, and you and I know this, but I flew out to St. Louis to see Chuck Berry, and you went to see Chuck Berry. Was that your first time seeing Chuck Berry, too?
Yeah, it was. And I think it was ended up being his last show, by the way.
Seriously?
I really feel like it was. I don't know. I mean, I don't think those things are, like, planned, but I don't think he played a show after.
Well, so, I mean, he was in kind of bad shape. You and I both know, like, heavy dementia. I just remember hearing Johnny B. Goode three times during the show in different keys. And I was like, he's allowed to play, you know, some weird notes. He's gone the ringer when it comes to life, you know. It's like, I was more concerned, like, how did he get home that night? Because, like, the security guard's like, yeah, he just gets in his car and drives. I'm like, I don't know if that dude should be driving at 83 years old. Like, you know, if he's not hearing the notes in the song right, maybe he shouldn't be behind a wheel and driving home, you know?
I wonder what he's listening to while he's driving.
Yeah, it's probably some, like, smooth jazz, man. He's probably
he's driving out, yeah. What was the original question? I'm sorry.
So we met at Blueberry Hill.
Oh.
And, you know, we were at that show, and I remember, like, you and I just started talking. We were standing right next to each other, and we realized we were both musicians. And then we ended up – you took me around. This was one of the coolest things anybody's done. You took me around to all the happening music spots that I never would have known in St. Louis, and we did some jam sessions all over. And then we went to a total greasy diner at, like, 4 a.m., and had breakfast, and I was like, that was the full St. Louis experience. I was only there for one night, and we made it such a great hang. And then you sat in with NK Band at Summerfest. I remember you drove. How far did you drive? Do you remember?
Oh, man. I was thinking about our history today. I was like, we got a lot of stories, like, whenever we're but the going back to the – it was my first time seeing Chuck Berry, and I actually got the phone call, like, the day of. That was like, hey, I have something on the guest list because my friend was opening. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to go see Chuck Berry.
Oh, yeah.
And that night, too, was really awesome because you know how you kind of don't know your town until someone else visits it?
Right.
I really felt that. And I felt a love for St. Louis.
What a great city.
Like
great.
Again, all over again through having that night. And it's been it was wonderful. So I really remember that night.
And dude, we vibed on all the music, dude. And then I remember you sat in with NK Band at Summerfest, and I remember you drove like 8 or 9 hours, something crazy. You were driving through the craziest weather too, right?
Yeah, I've driven through, you know, we've toured a lot. I've driven through a lot of things, but that was by far the scariest storm. No doubt. We drove, it was 9 hours, and I think it was 10 with the storm.
Right.
And, you know, we were just – we were in college, and I remember we just talked, and you were like, hey, you want to come up sit in? There was no question I was going to be there. I was like, heck yeah. And my great friend Aaron Tucker came with us, and we went in the Subaru.
Dude,
and it was an absolute blast. And, I mean, I'll let you – then someone else joined the party later that night.
Who joined the party late? Oh, that's right. This is Flavor Flav, dude.
Yes.
That was right, dude. We went back to the hotel, and Public Enemy was having a party in our hotel, and Flavor Flav was just, like, hanging down in the lobby, dude. That's right. That was that year. That's so crazy.
And my last favorite moment from that night was Chuck D came to the lobby. And I really fell in love with the blues through Martin Scorsese's blues series, where he talked about, you know, Chuck D and them were doing stuff with Electric Mud. And right. That's how I learned about Electric Mud. And so I went up to him. I was like, hey, I don't mean to bother you, but you introduced me to Electric Mud and henceforth Muddy Waters. And thank you. And he was like, oh, that was awesome. And it was so I would have never thought I would have been able to ever thank him.
He's like a serious cat. The funny thing is, you know, I played a gig once in San Diego, and his father-in-law and mother-in-law were at the gig. And, you know, like, they came up to me afterwards like, oh, you guys were fantastic. And I'm going to tell my son-in-law about you. I'm like, who's your son-in-law? He's like, Chuck D. And, you know, you hear this kind of bullshit all the time. When you play, you're like, okay, cool, cool, cool. No bullshit. Chuck D sends me an email, and he was like, hey, man, I think you and I have played some festivals together. I think I've seen you in some magazines. My father-in-law has been raving about you. Let's collaborate. And then I sent him an email back, and he's like, he sends me an email back like 5 months later, and he's like, hey, man, he's like, my response time is crazy because I get about 500 to 1,000 emails every day. So he said sometimes things just get lost in the shuffle. So when I ran into him in the lobby, I said, you and I have been emailing for the last 2 or 3 years. And he's like, what's your name? I said, Nikhil Karula. He's like, man, my father-in-law still talks about your band. And I was like, dude, amazing. I'm like, well, I'm going to send you an email. Just send me a response in 6 months. And he sure enough did. And that was the last we've kind of like talked about collaborating. But yeah, man, Chuck D, man, that was a great night. That was a great, great night. Gary Clark Jr. and then Public Enemy and then just the hang. It was another like epic hang, dude.
Yeah, that whole and we stayed the next couple days too, and that was all amazing as well. We saw Flaming Lips, like it was awesome.
And then you were touring with Devin Allman, son of Greg Allman. We both are huge Allman Brothers fans, and you were touring with him for how long? How long were you touring with Devin?
So I went on the road with him, which was Devin Allman Band, and then we kind of turned it into the Devin Allman Project, which we just made it a little bigger and kind of rebranded. So I did that for 2 years when I was playing in the band. And then they went off and did the Allman Betts Band, and the plan was to actually tour for 2 years and then me do my solo stuff, because that's all I really did before I was playing in bands. And so after all that, I would open with Jackson Stokes for the Allman Betts Band on tour.
And so Devin was like your neighbor. Wasn't he like your neighbor? Isn't that how you met? Something crazy like that, right?
Yeah, it's insane. I actually was just I lived in St. Charles, which is a suburb of St. Louis. And my dad is kind of like the get-to-know-the-neighbors guy. And he said, hey, you know, you've been playing guitar. You should talk to, you know, Devin over there. I was 12, and I show up, no joke, on his porch, and I just knock up. This is definitely a sign of the times. So I just knock on the door, and I had an acoustic guitar. And he opens the door, and thinking back on it, I'm like, he doesn't know me. What? And so, and then I played, and he saw, like, you know, I have a little more enthusiasm than just a random kid, you know. And so he's like, oh, and he would kind of, you know, I guess shadow me, or we'd hang out, and I'd show him some things, and then he would let me watch his band rehearse every Wednesday.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
And so for me, I would come home and, like, I had that amazing experience where I did my homework quick and got everything done so I could go and hang out with these people and watch them actually at the time, like, create a record, you know, at 12 or 13. And, you know, since then we just kind of kept in touch. And then finally, when I was 19 or 20, I guess I wrote good enough songs then. And he was like, man, I'd love to produce your record. And then we started that. And then I was joining his band. So it's been a wonderful, wonderful partnership throughout my career.
And then he signed you to his label, I think, right? One of the first artists that he signed. And then you guys went on the road, and that was the last time you and I hung out. You came to LA and you played in this super cool theater. I can't remember the name of the theater. I think that was the last show I've ever seen before the pandemic. I think your show was the last live show I saw before shit went down.
Yeah, it was the second to last for us. We played in like San Luis Obispo or something like that next. I don't remember what it was.
Oh, and then they just canceled the tour during all this?
Oh man, I don't even know where to start. So the LA show was awesome. And I think was it just LA Theater?
Something like that. It was a new theater that had just been revived. Because I remember it was still in the opening stage, like some parts of the theater you couldn't go to yet.
What's cool is in the backstage you could see the trapdoors that Houdini used.
Oh, that's awesome. Really?
Yeah, dude. That's crazy. Really cool. I love that. Well, how that all went down was we're touring, you know, with the other band. And so I got to like keep in touch with the managers kind of, but I'm a little lower on the list because you're the opener, you know?
Right.
So we're about to go to San Rafael. And we're about to leave and I get a text from Alden, you know, Alden, he just says, "Hey, we'll see you at home." And I was like, "What?" And we kind of knew it was coming. We knew that we had like Washington dates 5 days later and those were canceled. And I mean, you just turn around and you just go home. And the only funny part was I flew a filmmaker out and he was on the plane on his phone. And I said, "Hey, don't make a stink, but like any way you can ask to get off." And they were like, "Yeah, it's too late." And so he flew to San Francisco. And I got him a flight back. So he flew to San Francisco for 8 hours.
Wow.
Went, saw the Golden Gate, got some dim sum, got on the plane, and went back home.
That is crazy. You know, it's like one of those things where it's like, no touring artist is going to see something like that. You know, like that's not going to happen. It's like no one could see a pandemic. You were like one of the artists. You finally got a tour, which is great, like a big tour like this. And you're opening all these cool shows, and then it just gets snaked right underneath. Like, you're like, what? And then it's like, you just drove home. You just drove home from San Francisco, basically.
Mm-hmm. But what's insane about it, too, was, you know, it's not that just me, a lowly songwriter in St. Louis, drove home. Justin Bieber drove home. Like, no one was immune to it, you know. That's what was crazily insane. Yeah, we drove however long that is from San Francisco to St. Louis home, and we hit a snowstorm at 3 a.m. in Arizona.
What? Really?
It was insane, man. But we made it home, and the weird part about that time too was no one knew like a lot of information comparative to what we know now, and we didn't know if borders were going to be closed down. So it was just a really weird time, but we had a great group of guys, and we got home safe and sound, and we've been here since.
Dude, you know what? I think you're actually the first musician that I've talked to that was on tour and got sent home. Because I know a lot of people that had dates that were canceled, they're about to leave, or they had just finished a show and they were off for 2 weeks and they were going to go back out, and you were in it. Like, did you think at the time, "Oh, this will be done in like a month and we'll be right back out"?
No, I was like, I said 6 months to a year, to be honest. I just felt the gravity of it was something that we wouldn't understand. And I kind of like compared it to a war in the sense, you know, like when we had World War II, that was 4 years. That was 5 years of people getting new jobs or, you know, rationing things or whatever. And so I was like, you know, luckily it's not that, but, you know, I was like, it's probably going to be 6 months. And then quickly, 2-3 months in, you're like, "Oh, it's definitely going to be a year before we're back going."
We were in the middle of recording. I remember we started the record January 13th, and we were in the middle of recording. And then we had, I think, one horn section, which could have been, we were like, "Okay, this, if we have to stop," because we started to see the writing on the wall. We're like, "If we have to stop, then we know that this could be the last session and we'll have everything that we need. There's some more sessions we could have done, but we can't get to everything with how everything is turning out as far as the pandemic. So we were halted, but it was like, luckily we had everything done and we just had the, we were able to wrap it up and start mixing, but like it definitely halted everything. And I thought that was awkward, but I couldn't imagine, because it's a process, you know, being on the road. And it's also a mindset. It's like, you have to kind of get engaged and like ready for that. And it's like, you're like getting ready to do it. And then it just gets kind of, you know, halted. And it's like, you're back home earlier than you probably want to be. And it's like, okay, how did you like kind of recuperate for that first month or 2 weeks just being off the road?
Well, it was kind of, I mean, if we'll be candid about all that, and it was almost like that was a fine part. It was like the adrenaline from the road kind of got back. We're like, we're going to hunker down and everyone's getting toilet paper and it was all crazy. And, you know, and you kind of had that. And then there's the bumps and bruises of coming back from tour. You're really tired. You're trying to figure that out. And I was doing a bunch of stuff, but I think it really was hard for me about 3 months in. Huh. Like truly, that's when it was really hard for me mental health wise. And I went through some mental health problems, you know, just kind of with everyone. Everyone's been through their little spout of it, because this just exposed a lot of things that were already there, you know?
Right.
And so for me, it was kind of when after the adrenaline, everything died down, and it, you know, like I've been so blessed that my adult life, I've really never lived in a static place or been, you know, as a musician, we have cheap apartments or we move and we're moving things. And even, I mean, there was a point where I lived in my parents' because I was playing 5 or 6 nights a week. I was just sleeping. So it's, you know, so just getting used to being at home and being at home for an extended period of time and finding the happiness and beauty in that, which I have, baby. It's
wonderful. No, it's going to be tough for musicians now that we're used to this to like, oh yeah, let's get back on the road. It's like, man, there's so much that you kind of redefine your life a little bit. The thing that I get irritated with the music industry, I'm like, you know, like sports has found a way to keep pushing forward. And you see even movies, okay, they're just going to stream. But like the music industry is just completely halted and there's no solution and there's no kind of like, you know, awakening as to like, okay, what's the next step? It's like theaters and clubs are shut down and there's no alternative to kind of like, or a medium to kind of showcase music. And it drives me nuts. And it's like, this is the first time that we're releasing a record and we can't even do a CD release show. It's like, we can't even release it, you know, for people to be in an enclosed space to listen to it. It's like everything is just like, okay, here's the record. We put a year into this and now we're going to release it. So like I understand. And it's like it definitely is a mentally challenging obstacle to figure out how to stay creative, how to stay inspired. But you know what? Tell me like one of the things that kind of helped you get back on course, helped you get back to the music, helped you get back to writing, or just kind of like staying creative?
A lot of meditation. You know, like I would say meditation and exercise. Y'all are from California, you guys know. you know, I always joke, I like have all these, I wore my California shirt for you guys.
Yeah. Like, you know? Dude.
23 degrees. Hey, my man. I'm sorry. You got to remind me. I forgot what I was talking
about. We were talking about how did you get back into being creative after kind of, you know, you said meditation, exercise.
That and just learning, kind of re-engineering things to back why I started. Your roots, you know. And I thought back to times where I was truly creative, times where I was confident, and I made decisions that were me. And I always just joked that it was high school. You know, like high school, I was just doing everything and I loved it. And, you know, all your ideas are like, you know, you figure out what politics is and you think you know everything. And even though you know you're ignorant, you're still, you want to capture that feeling. And so I just started kind of doing a lot more things and figuring out who I am. And so via that, especially with music, listening to music and really enjoying it, right, and looking at it from a macro level rather than micro picking it apart. And I kind of started like looking at things in a broader spectrum. And I think a big thing is, for me, was it taught me that things aren't that big of a deal. You know, we're not doing brain surgery.
Right.
We're playing notes. Right. Our whole job is to make people feel, sometimes feel good, sometimes feel sad, but we just got to make them feel, you know? And if you don't make them feel, that's fine. No one gets hurt. Nothing's wrong, you know? And so it's all a privilege and a blessing. And when you approach it that way, the creativity comes back. When there's that pressure not there, especially for someone who's like, you're self-conscious or something. It's not like Miles Davis. Like, Miles Davis didn't need anyone to tell him, you know, right, what he was going to do. But it, once I kind of did that, it just started flowing again. And I've been writing a lot of stuff, and I've been writing a lot of simple stuff that, you know, like kind of classic rock stuff, like stuff that I listened to growing up that now I have a completely different, like, you know, perspective and spectrum on. So.
I love that. And you know what? You kind of came a lot from the, like, obviously the blues, but like, was your dad a major influence in you picking up the guitar? You said you started around 12 years old. Is that when you started picking up a guitar?
Yeah. This is another thing I just noticed. So no one in my family, I have a very creative family. No one in my family plays music though.
Huh.
But my dad is a giant influence on my taste. He would always listen to the cool local. Everyone has the cool local hip radio station where it changes every 2 hours. Yeah. We would listen to that one in St. Louis, KDHX. And also, he would play a lot of, you know, I grew up on vinyls. He would not buy me CDs. Like, oh, you like Skinner? Well, we got it right here. Or, you know, or like, here, check out this. All the, you know, Allman Brothers things or Led Zeppelin too. So I like grew up to that stuff.
Right.
It was really important. And so he put that kind of in my brain. And I would say influenced me a lot just on taste and how I love, you know, like I love groove and I love soul. And it's like, I've been listening to Bill Withers since I was 5. I just didn't know it. You know, why do I love Live at Carnegie Hall now? That's because I was listening to
such a great record, dude. Dog. Such a great record.
Can I just, okay, I got to hold on because I can't cuss, but.
Oh, you can cuss. You can cuss.
Okay. There's only one motherfucker in the world that their first song, they do an encore. And no one cares. And they just play. It's, the groove is so good. It's so magical. And, oh man, I'm getting off
topic. Crazy. I saw John Legend and the Roots when they did their throwback record. Mm-hmm. And John Legend invited Bill Withers. And this is a small show of maybe 50 people. So Bill Withers is sitting 4 or 5 seats from me. And like, to me, like, first of all, he's been kind of like a mysterious soul. Like, he's not performing, he's not out and about.
What was he wearing?
He was just wearing, like, it was like casual dad PTA meeting clothes, like literally just like a short sleeve collared shirt and just like khakis. Like, he was like, you wouldn't have known it was him until John Legend said Bill Withers is here, and then it made you look and you're like, oh my god, Bill Withers is right here. So after the show, I still wanted to meet him, and like, you know, it's 50 people getting up off their seats and 50 people walking, and he was like right there, but it was just not a convenient way to get to him without really being an asshole to like 10 people right behind them, you know? So I was hoping I would catch him when he got outside and do like a phantom. He just disappeared like Bill Withers does. So I was like, that's the closest I've got to him, you know? So it was like, that was it, you know? So yeah, man, he was the icon of soul music in so many ways, you know?
He's in my top 3. Like, of artists of all time, it's probably Marvin Gaye, Bob Marley, and him. And just if we're talking about like a full spectrum, you know.
Yeah.
And when the pandemic happened, I was driving home and I was making ideas for live streams. So this would be March 13th, around there, March 11th, March 13th.
Wow, that's early.
I wrote, all these like things or ideas, you know, let's do a soul night, let's do a rock night, let's do an 80s night. And there was one artist that I put tribute, and I put Bill Withers night. I want to do a Bill Withers night.
That's dope.
Lo and behold, a week and a half, 2 weeks later, he passes.
Right.
And I literally, the live stream was the next day. And I was like, you know, like, man, you got to do it for Bill.
That's crazy.
Out of all the celebrity deaths for me, that was, in a great way, the hardest one. You know, and I heard about it in the morning, and I went in, I listened to Grandma's Hand, and I just cried. You know, he's
such a good song.
Dude.
He was just a great songwriter, a great soul singer, and I love that he's a major influence on you, because here's the thing. You're in your 20s, right? You're 26, 27?
28. Getting up there.
Yeah, but not quite. Now, I'm 42, man. I'm still, you know, but, you know, kids in your, like, generation, they don't listen to Bill Withers. So I love, like you're kind of an old soul with all the influences that your dad kind of put in your path, because, you know, most kids your age aren't listening to that stuff. They're listening to stuff that doesn't inspire me. So I love that I can have a conversation with you about Bill Withers, and you're like, he's my top songwriter, because it's like, oh yeah, man, because he's always been like that for me too, man. Bill Withers is like the dude, you know, when it comes to soul music.
The things, yes, and the thing I love about Bill Withers, he was truly himself, never anything else.
Right.
But he also knew how to surround himself with great people that made his songs better. But great songs can be translated better. You know what I mean? Like, great songs can be played on an acoustic or be played with a great funk band. And, like, it's just both. It's just everything coming together. But also great simplicity and depth. And I could go on.
So let me ask you, how did you incorporate some of those things in your own record or with your own ideas or with your own songs?
I would say I'm doing it more now than on this last record. I think it's, yet again, kind of the look at the macro is that nothing he's doing is complex, but it's poignant. And right. It's like, it's done just from the heart, but also all with the purpose. And so I just kind of taught me to slow down and tell a story. And, you know, that you don't have to write big words. You don't have to write hard things. And you don't need a Strat to funk, because that man just played acoustic.
Dude, and his drum was like so funky, and it was nothing like, you know, like crazy technique wise, you know, but it was all heart, all hearts.
And just, I think the thing that he did is that I'm learning myself is just, he trusted himself. He's like, well, this is Bill. This is my song I wrote. Okay, let's play it.
Well, let me ask you this. So, like, I remember when I did my first record. My first record was in 2003. And, you know, now looking back, you know, now I just finished my 8th record. And the mindset is so different for me from those two extremes. You just finished your 2nd record, correct?
Technically my first full length, though.
First full length. Okay, so when you did that first full length, what was the kind of vision of, like, you throwing down? Was it like proving yourself? Was it like kind of like attracting an older audience while also maintaining that younger audience? Was it like, yeah, because I always felt like I had so much to prove on that first record, whereas this record, I'm like, I have nothing to prove. I proved it to myself, and now let's have some fun. It was a totally different mental state. So, like, when you made that first record, kind of what were you kind of thinking going into making that record?
That's a really great question. I mean, this record specifically changed over so much. It's kind of made over 2 years, but not like Dark Side of the Moon made over 2 years.
Right.
Every once in a while off of tour, not like I'm in a studio. So, you know, it's been, I think I just went into it honestly as mainly a learning experience. And I know that sounds like not convicted, but I already had wrote the songs and made demos. And especially when we got with Devin, I kind of felt like, well, here's my ideas. and let's see what we can do from that. So I learned so much in working with people and how the process is done. But really, I mean, at the end of the day, I just want to write great songs. Like, you know, that's, yeah. And I know that's so cliche. I feel like I'm doing an NFL interview right now, but
no, but it's the truth. I just want
someone to end listening to a record being like, man, that was some good songs. Because at the end of the day, we got such busy lives. No one, like, the majority of people are not going to hear your record. Majority of people are going to hear your record and they're going to get a little feeling. And then that great little minority is going to like love it. And that's beautiful too. But it's just like you make, you know, hey, those were some good songs, you know.
Right.
Might have been my genre, might have not. They were some good songs and someone wrote them out of their heart, you know. And I think with the older audience thing, it's something I've thought about. And I'm just a grandpa. I like old music when I go to.
I love it. See, that's why I always want to play shows with you, want to listen to your records, because you have that kind of grasp. Like, it's really weird. Like, I really feel like an old fogey when I hear, like, when I hear new music, I'm like, oh, God, really? Come on. You know, like, I sound like a curmudgeon. And then when you hear somebody that's, like, classic, like, it was such a breath of fresh air to hear a Gary Clark Jr. for me, because it's like, oh, man, somebody that's got these blues and roots, you know, like, as a thing, you know. Or, you know, it's like, even who's that kid out of Kingfish? You know Kingfish?
Oh, yeah.
Stone? That guy's like the truth, man. It's like, when I hear somebody that's doing that, I'm like, thank God that legacy of the blues is preserved through those pipelines or those bloodstreams or whatever, because – man, it's like music I care about so much. Funk and blues and soul and reggae and rock, all that stuff I care so much about. And it's like I never want to see it fade away, but I see it fading away on this new generation. So let me ask you, as an artist that loves all this old music, how are you able to kind of, you know, attract that younger audience and introduce them to maybe music they've never heard that is influence has been such a pivotal influence for you?
Well, I think I was thinking specifically is like interviews, you know what I mean? Like saying where your influences kind of come from. Because a lot of times you'll write that it might be an influence, but it's not going to come out like that because it's you doing it, you know?
Right.
And so, yeah, I'm sorry, Nikki. I love it.
No, I was just saying, like, your generation, it's like, you know, it's like such a different way to listen to music. Like, people show me songs on cell phones. Like, my generation, we're like, hey, man, listen to this track. Check out these headphones. Or, like, go to nice speakers. That's my generation. And I still do that. I'm like, yo, don't show me this on a cell phone. Like, email it to me so I can listen to it on my speakers and really get into the vibe. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, so, like, how do you attract an audience, what, like, marketing to your demographic of that new generation with some of this old influence music, you know?
I think personally it's diversifying. And so for me too, is I, like, the way I handle it is I know what I'm going to write is going to be rather classic rock, old soul, old funk. Like, that's what it's going to be. I'm not, but I contribute to a lot of projects that are in different genres. And like, I play with Tonina, I'm full time and contribute to her record. And she does Latin singer songwriter and, you know, electronic music. Right. And so that can pull a different audience to where those people come to your shows and go, wow. Because I think the thing about live music and live rock and roll and good speakers, most people just haven't heard it. They haven't been out. Like, we're around, you know, that, but if you grow up with those people, especially, like, you know, in the Midwest, unfortunately, it's like most of the people have never been to, like, a live show besides, like, you know, there's something that's not even personal.
Right. And
they've never seen a sweaty guy with a guitar 10 feet in front of them and, you know, warmth in the air. And, like, and so I think it's just kind of about, you know, exposure and getting them to it. And with the with the good definition and listening to the speakers, I think in a good way the headphones and everything has made at least the everyone's kind of ear quality like get a little higher. Right. But I am a completely against cell phone playbacks. So that
love it.
And there's nothing more awkward too than someone, I don't even have it, but someone going like this and looking at you for approval. Right. Yeah.
You're like, no, dude, I can't dig on that.
I can tell you every demo I've ever made, besides maybe some solo acoustic things, is I've never like shown it to someone on a phone. They've been, oh,
dude, there are engineers I know that now teach other engineers how to mix for cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what? No, I'll never do that. I will mix for good speakers. And if you don't have good speakers, hopefully your headphones are good. If your headphones aren't good, then maybe you just need to figure out another source, because I'm not going to dumb down something that I care so much about for it to be on such a shitty playback. I mean,
I agree. But if you have the facilities to make two mixes,
right,
and that other mix can bring someone to the other mix, to right. the real thing, then isn't that like...
Well, that's what I do with mastering. Like, I actually made a different master for iTunes and Spotify, a different master for the vinyl, a different master for the CDs. Yeah. And it was like, yeah, that's the way you do it. You do it like that, so it adheres to all those different, markets. But
it's also great for the artist to promote how it's listened to best. Be like, hey, AAA, rock it on vinyl, crank it up. Like,
well, you know, the weird thing is, like, I've done so many records, but they've all been on CD. This is the first time I did a record on vinyl. And I don't know if I even played you music on this system, but man, I listened to my new record. They sent me vinyl test prints. And man, I wept because I was like, this sounds just like the tapes that we recorded them on. You know, it's like, finally, somebody's figured out how it can translate. And it's like, most people won't get the vinyl, but I don't care. It's like, at least it's available if you are that person that wants to listen to it like that. You know,
the right people will.
Yes, the right people will. Let's get to some of your music. What do you want to play us first?
Why don't we go with, let's actually go with Time Is Now. That's the first single.
Time Is Now. Here it comes. Jackson Stokes.
No tears left to cry. Lost with desolation turns a mind so dry in bed. Lost my motivation, never seen the actual light. I can't complete my mission to attain something live in my head. In my head. In my head. Empty in my body, head to toe. Can't force motivation, and then I lose control on you. Thinking on my failings, seems there's no end in sight. So to keep on trying, wins no pride inside of you. Of you, inside of you. Inside of you. I used to run, I used to love. Come back around, I'll put down. My time is now, my time is now, 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 girl, now. I used to love, love, love. Come back around, I will go down. My time is now, my time is now, now, now.
Yeah, man. Super funky, dude.
Thanks, brother.
Love it, dude. You know, it's so funny. You actually do something so crazy and so awesome. So you're a shredding guitar player. Like, you are not a guitar player that can, you know, just, I mean, you can pretty much play any style in a lot of ways, but you shred. And it's so funny because when you play records, I always hear the restraint, and it's such a mature choice. But like, man, you're way too young to show that much restraint on a guitar solo. Tell me how and why you're thinking with so much restraint.
Because I've gotten yelled at enough.
But dude, there's so many times where I'm just like, oh man, because you can wail. Like that's what I love. Like, you know, when you sat in with us at Summerfest, I even told you, I'm like, man, play. Like, these songs are this is what this band is about playing. And I loved your guitar solo that you played when you sat in with us. And it's like, man, that's who you are to me. I'm like, dude, play like that all the time. But it's also, I understand it because it's like, whenever I track a guitar solo, I always put the most noodliest solo. Like, the first five takes are like the stupidest solo I would never record. And then you get to that place where you're like, I'm going to make some music and make something great. Tell me what you're thinking when you're writing the tune and when you're tracking that guitar solo.
Well, bad ideas eventually bring good ideas.
I like that. That's good.
So over the, you know, I would try to do it. When I was younger, I'd try to play a lot, and then everyone would be like, simpler, 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 simpler,
right,
simpler.
Right.
And in a good way, I've gotten to the point now where I start simple, but then I realize, like, okay, well, this is a little too – and then I go up, and then it comes back down as a good meeting.
Like a dismount. I find those – like, there's two solos on the record that I played on this last record, and it's like one is like – very composed, very just like, it's a beautiful solo. And it took me 40 takes to get that solo right, because I knew where I wanted to go, how I wanted it to sound, how relaxed and the vibe and everything. And then there was a solo, I was like, no, this is going to be improvised. I don't want it to be structured at all. And that took me like two or three takes. And they both have this, there's a magic to both of them. But I find that like, it's so much more fun just to like, lay it all out there and play versus like getting that like musical thing where you're like trying to make a nuance, a phrase, whatever it is. Like, how do you balance those two without sounding like I'm going to do an Eddie Van Halen guitar lick versus I want to play one note and make you feel it?
So this is easier said than done. But if you listen, the song's going to tell you, you know what I mean? Like, if you listen, the parts, the people, the situation, it's all going to tell you how you should play. You just got to be perceptive of it.
Right.
And I think specifically recording sometimes you should show a little more restraint than live in general, usually, just because you're hearing things different than someone on the other side is going to hear it.
What I love about that track too, it's like a funky Randy Newman vibe, and I love Randy Newman, and I love like the Meters, and it's got like that Meters kind of backbeat groove, but it's got the songwriting of Randy Newman, who I think is like one of the best. And it's just got this soul thing too. You kind of have like a lot of these influences pulling your ear in a lot of different ways. How did you kind of think about the vision of the song when you were recording it? Like, I heard a little slapback delay on the vocals. I heard a little bit of kind of like a phaser at the end. Like, you like, were you going like a little bit disco, a little bit soul funk?
Well, a lot of this was pretty. Devin was decently hands on for this, and I kind of led him because he kind of heard my original idea. So the groove is pretty much mine. I write groove up a lot of times.
Okay.
So I'm picky about, you know, the groove. I'm still rewriting the song, the groove wise live, but. So for this one, the stuff that Dev kind of added that I think was, you know, the synthesizers were something that I hadn't thought about before, and that kind of edge, because we had this record that was like funky, but everything is with traditional kind of recording things. So every once in a while you can throw something in there. It was actually kind of right around the time where that Chili Peppers album came out, and it was kind of a blend of both too.
Right.
Also, like, I love Talking Heads, and that's kind of a blend of both sometimes.
Right.
And so we just wanted to kind of, like, peek at that a little bit. And that was his idea. And I was kind of like, oh, I think, you know, it's cool to ride with that. And I forgot about that synth sound at the end. But it just rocks. But for me, you know, it was the ride and the groove. And that's what I got picky on. But the tones really were Devin's choices in a lot of.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a lot going on, but it's not getting in the way. Those are like my favorite tracks. It's like when you hear things like in layers, you hear sounds and textures, and it seems like it has a lot of nuance like that. It's a pretty funky track, dude.
Cool. Well, good. Yeah, that's mostly Devin, especially for the production and the choices of kind of like, because I like that too. It just,
and did you come in with like just a raw demo, and you were like, what do you think, where should we go with this? Or do you have an idea of what you wanted to do?
I played that with the band. So like during all of this, I'd kind of been playing a lot of these songs with the band, and some of it were ones that I'd played a lot with the band. Some of it were ones that the band hadn't seen yet. So, and that one specifically, we had it pretty much down how we wanted it. And when I showed it to Devin, he didn't want to really change a thing.
Yeah.
There was some stuff that we, you know, completely changed for the better. But that one, we were just like, we just went straight up. And so I think I usually have a demo, like I make it on, you know, GarageBand or something, or Logic, or, and I usually just have a rough demo, some fake keys or whatever, so that people can get my full vibe. And I think I started with that, but also Devin made me play it on an acoustic guitar.
Oh, wow.
Which is a very important process, that I think was good for me, you know, on my journey, because I can do, you know, with the demos and stuff at home, it's like I could have 100%, you know, of the creativity, and I could make 50 million layers and tracks, but it's like, if you can't sit down and play this song with the acoustic guitar,
what is it? What? Yeah, right.
Yeah, right. At least a version of it. But and having said that, with the right band and the right groove, it should just be enhanced. But you know,
right. That's like, a sign of a good song. It can come down to the root and still be its thing. Let's play something else. What are you going to play us next?
We're actually, you know, we're on LA Talk Radio. So I was looking on what I wanted to pick out, and there's a guest on the record, and it is my man from Santa Monica, born and raised, Johnny Stachla, who's the slide guitar player for the Almond Betts band.
Oh, and, awesome.
Yeah, he was in
he's killer, dude. He is killer.
Dude.
Killer player.
He's a beast. Great, great dude, and he's been a big inspiration for me. I mean, every day on tours. Hey, what's this? Or what do you think of this? Or, you know, and usually he's been good at helping me along, and we did even Skype lessons and stuff like that. Like, we keep in touch, and so it's been great. But he rocked a killer slide solo, even quoted Mahalia Jackson in the middle of it.
Oh, wow.
So I love it. So this is kind of a New Orleans based tune called Sins Are Forgiven.
Sins Are Forgiven. Here comes Jackson Stokes.
Take me away from where I'm living. Show me a place where sins are forgiven. And take me to your love. I know a place where soil is the reaches, but thou have the space to cross all the bridges. And take me to your love. Well, and all the water's wine, there's no money, ladies, I find. Just take me to your love. I know a place where I will act better. Smiles all around, no matter what the weather. And take me to your love. And then tell me what I have. Just to find a way, my heated lights, spend my time going high, just to figure out what was in your eyes. I love you, I never meant to let you go. I love you, I never meant to let you go.
Shall we the message to the receiver? Oh, boy, and answer someday. Jackson, you there?
Yeah, what's up, brother?
I don't know what happened, but my modem may have just booted me out of the show, so now I'm on my cell phone. But I did listen to the tracks, man. Dude, I love that New Orleans sound. Very, very kind of like, who am I thinking of? The Neville Brothers, man. Very Neville Brothers-ish, dude. Tell me, like, what were you thinking, like, just getting that New Orleans sound? What gave you that grease, man?
Oh, dog, I love New Orleans music just in general. I mean, the genre from start to finish, even New Orleans bounce, like all of it, it's just got a flavor. And I got really nerdy into claves for a long time. And there's a New Orleans clave specifically that's like,
yep.
And you can find, like, you listen to Pine Top Perkins, you listen to, you know, Galactic, like, you know, it's got that, any of the Mardi Gras songs. And so I've just always loved it. And I'm a sucker for, I obviously love the Meters, who doesn't? But I'm also a sucker for 80s Neville Brothers, like Yellow Moon and Fire on the Bayou. And like that sound, late 70s, 80s, is like, dude, their arrangements and production were way cool. So I kind of like was listening to that at the time and just went for that. Yeah.
No, it's got like, that's what I mean. It's like, nobody's really doing that now. That's what's so cool that you're doing that. It's like, you know, it's got this like signature vibe of funk and blues and soul and rock, but it's also got like this, you really can tell, like, it's sometimes you sound like you're from St. Louis. Sometimes you sound like you're from New Orleans. Do you find that sometimes it's overwhelming to kind of encompass all these sounds to try and, you know, make your own sound as a musician?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I think that's the thing we fight with every day, or I guess I don't think fight is the right word. That's why we do it. You know, it's the process. But for me, it's been a very recent thing since I've started to kind of embrace specifically, you know, an identity. 'Cause I think I always was, you know, molding to other projects or kind of molding this or molding to that. And I think it takes a while, you know, you got to get through a lot of phases first. Right. You know, I always joke, you got to get through the jazz phase. You got to get through this phase. You got to get through the jam phase. You got to until at the end. And you just are like, wow, this is, I'm stuck with me. You know, it's just me. And that's awesome. You know, hopefully that's what you say. And so you say, let's look at what we have and do the best with it. And so when I first started writing, I would try to do a lot of emulation. I want this to sound exactly like this. Right. And I would get mad if it doesn't sound like it. And it's like, well, Tyler, you're not going to make an authentic Cuban sewn song. Like, it's not going to happen. So just relax and just try to make it. And it's going to come out weird. And the more you just embrace that and let that happen, then I think, the more you're gonna find it shines.
Well, what's next for you? You know, in this pandemic era, are you looking to make another record? Are you looking to just get back on the road? What's next for Jackson Stokes?
So I'm actually, yeah, I've been blessed to do some opening solo shows for the Almond Betts band, and I'm working on the crew for them. It just kind of like was a convenient role thing. So I'm actually doing that next month, and I gotta double check on the, yeah, we're in like Austin and Dallas and Memphis and Woodlands, Texas, and you can find it on my website, jacksonstokes.com. And then a nice way to we go out as solo, but the percussionist of the Almond Betts band and the bass player sound guy both play with me, and they're ripping bass players and percussionists. So we do a little trio thing. That's been a lot of fun.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, anytime you're able to play in this, year has been a blessing for sure. And in a good way, we're able to keep things safe and everyone follows protocols. And it's been good so far. But that's my next. And right now I'm just writing a bunch and trying to do as many collaborations within safe, you know, safety guidelines and like limits as possible. Just trying to work with people and kind of find my way through working with other people. I haven't done as much co-writing as I'd want to do. So I've just been doing that and playing with a lot of different bands and working on Tonina's next record as well. So kind of helping them write that. And we're going to be recording that at Empire Records in San Francisco. So
nice. You have to come down to LA and come visit your old friend, dude.
Hey, man, I will let you next. Hey, you know I hit you up every time I'm there.
Yeah, man, I know.
What's funny is you would have laughed at how close I thought San Francisco and LA were when I heard it, like, knew it. Yeah, I'm like, ah, this is 2 hours or something.
You're like, no, it's not that close. No. But you know what, Jackson, you have been a tremendous guest. Thank you so much for being on Wake Up Hollywood. I look forward to more albums from you, more music. Keep going on your journey. Don't let even a pandemic stand in your way, man. Keep the fire burning. And one more time, where can people find your music? Where can people find you on social media?
All the good stuff, you know, Spotify, iTunes, all that. Also, best way to get it, if you want to get a physical copy too, or just support it as well, as JacksonStokes.com. That's the most direct support, I would say. But anyway,
spell it out because people are dumb.
JacksonStokes.com. So thank you. I should just start doing that.
Yeah, man. So I look forward to new music from you. I look forward to jamming with you again soon. We're going to have to definitely co-write some stuff too. Yeah, man, just stay healthy, stay safe, stay inspired. And thank you again for being on Wake Up Hollywood, man. You ended our year of radio shows, man. Yeah,
this means this has been a long time coming, and I want to thank you for everything. And I love that we don't get to see each other a lot, but every time it's fucking epic.
Dude, it's magic every time, man. Dude, you take care of yourself. Take care of your girl. Take care of everything in your world, man. And much love to you and your family. And I'll see you on the flip side, man.
Hey, scratch that pup for me, brother.
He was scratching at the door. I was like, not today. I'm doing an interview.
Much love. Thank you. All
right? Yeah, man. All right. Be good, Jackson.
You too.
Take care. Right. Happy New Year, bro.
Happy New Year.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.